From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Halston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where, across the state and the country, trans women are at a high risk of sex trafficking and exploitation. In their youth, they face discrimination, family rejection, and systemic failures. As a result, many end up in the state child welfare system, where they can be mistreated, misidentified, and ultimately driven to homelessness. Eventually, many end up engaging in sex work, not as a clear choice, but as a means of survival. GBH investigative reporter Philip Martin has been looking into this, and he joins us now to talk about it. Hey, Philip, nice to talk to you again.
Paris, thanks for having me on.
Philip, what makes young trans women at higher risk than others for engaging in sex work?
Well, it's because they are the most marginalized of individuals who basically engage in sex work. A disproportionate number of trans girls and women engage in sex work, and that's because of transphobia. Many are kicked out of their homes at a very early age. In foster care, many run away because their gender is not affirmed. They have a hard time holding on to jobs, largely because of discrimination. So many of them live couch to couch and find that the only way that they can survive is by selling their bodies. Now, data in Massachusetts and across the United States is lacking on this problem. But a 2015 survey by a group called the National Center for Transgender Equality found that 1 in 5 trans women in Paris said that they had engaged in sex work.
That sounds harsh, Philip, but that is the reality. And what do these women say about sex work themselves?
And you're right, it's a harsh reality. And let me introduce you to one of them. One of the people we interviewed is a woman named Drea Cartozzi, now 52 years old. But she started selling her body for cash at age 17.
I figured out the game at a very young age.
Now, her birth certificate identified her as a boy. But she said she always knew she was a female. She always knew that she was a girl growing up. Now, she grew up in this impoverished family. Like many trans girls, she was molested as a child. And she said she learned quickly that she had to take care of herself to stay alive.
The straight male that has to appear strong, the corporate male that has to appear strong in front of society, escapes to me. I knew I needed money to pay rent. I knew I needed money to eat, to survive.
So Paris, now Cartozzi survived. In fact, in some ways, she thrived. She went on to work at Nordstrom's and never looked back at sex work after that. But to be honest with you, many others haven't survived. Many others haven't done well.
And tell us more about this pipeline from the foster care system to sex work.
It's not unusual in general. Foster care kids are really among the most exploited and the most vulnerable kids in the country. But trans youth, it's particularly bad. We had one story that came from My Life, My Choice, which works with at-risk kids and those who have been trafficked. And My Life, My Choice said they worked with a grandmother who refused to acknowledge her granddaughter as a she, continually referred to her as him. And no matter what program they tried to put her in, the grandmother insisted that she go into a program for males. Now, this, of course, sets the stage for them to be preyed upon by sex traffickers who groom young transgender females. That's a big problem within the foster care system. A lot of these kids go AWOL for months at a time, often falling into abusive or predatory relationships, guys who say, we love you, for the purpose of pimping them out. And a damning report released in July by the Massachusetts Commission on LGBTQ Youth alleges that the State Department of Children and Families had failed to protect LGBTQ youth under its care from traffickers, pimps, and the like. Hannah Hussey is the author of that report.
Many young people are placed in homes where there hasn't been sufficient, if any, investigation done about whether that home will be affirming for them. We hear of social workers scrambling to find placements for transgender youth.
And Paris, this problem's not new. In the 1990s, the Massachusetts Governor Weld had created something called a Governor's Commission on Gay and Lesbian Youth. And it also revealed a pipeline of LGBTQ youth who aged out of foster care and ended up homeless. Many sold their bodies to survive, the commission's 1994 report found.
So it sounds like little has changed in the decades since. Why is that?
So things have changed, but not in a major way. Patience Crozier, she's a senior attorney for GLAAD in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She says a major obstacle to ascertaining the depth of commercial sexual exploitation of young transgender females is the state's failure to identify them. There's no data. Now, we spoke, GBH News, investigative unit, we spoke with the Massachusetts DCF. We received only a written response, and the department said that it had launched trainings for social workers focused specifically on sex trafficking of high-risk children, including transgender and youth who identify as LGBTQ and gender nonconforming. And I got to tell you, Paris, this is a national problem. It's not just Massachusetts. Transgender youth, especially trans female youth of color, are more likely than heterosexual youth, for example, to run away from home and foster care. And federal studies support this.
So what's there to be done?
Well, it's a good question. You asked the operative question. I think we can start with affirming a transgender girl's identity and instilling confidence at an early age. That's what experts say. That's what we're finding is the consensus position. The nonprofit Annie E. Casey Foundation recommends that courts take a more active role to guarantee that states comply with the existing law. Now, Hussey says it's imperative Massachusetts officials act quickly because there are high suicide rates among transgender youth in foster care, among other issues. In Paris, a 2021 study by the Boston-based Judge Baker's Children's Center. Now, it found that about a quarter of transgender students in this state, in Massachusetts, mainly girls, report having been raped or abused while dating. They, more than anyone else, are likely to report sexual intercourse before the age of 13. That's what the report found. Now, there are roughly about 6,000 trans and gender nonconforming high schoolers in Massachusetts, or about 2% of the state's nearly 290,000 students. Christopher Balance, who we interviewed, who's the chief medical officer of the Baker Center, says trans youth need to be provided resources to live as well as affirmation of who they are.
If you don't feel good about yourself, and we don't address that despair and that underlying poor self-esteem, then these young people are going to continue to make poor choices. And I don't feel like many of these young people feel like they have a choice when they end up in these situations.
I can tell you, in trying to report this story, a story as part of a series we've been working on for more than a year, it was very difficult to get transgender girls to speak with us. Lots of them backed out of interviews. We were ghosted. We had set up interviews, dinners. They didn't show up. And from what we understand from Shipley Brooks and others, they felt that they could not be treated and would not be treated fairly in the public arena. And so it's a difficult story, but more difficult, of course, is the life that they're dealing with and the prejudice that is the reason for many of the problems they're dealing with right now.
Well, Philip, I really appreciate you helping us shine a light in this direction. That's GBH investigative reporter Philip Barton. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paris.
Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. Lawmakers on Beacon Hill are making a new push to end mandatory minimums for certain drug crimes, sentencing laws that have long been criticized as disproportionately impacting people of color. State Representative Bud Williams of Springfield says it's time to revisit the issue.
So we need to take a look at it and give it a fresh look. But something has to be done because the scales of justice are tipped in the wrong direction when it comes to mandatory sentencing.
The state legislature did pass a sweeping criminal justice overhaul 3 years ago that eliminated some mandatory minimums. Meanwhile, you may have heard the story of Henrietta Lacks, a Black woman who unknowingly donated her cancer cells to medical research in 1951. Well, now, a Waltham-based company is facing a lawsuit for allegedly profiting off innovations made using those cells, 70 years after Lacks' death. Lax's descendants say that Thermo Fisher Scientific was aware that tissue samples had been taken from Lax without her consent. Lawyer Chris Seeger is representing the Lax estate.
If you use something that you know to not be yours, and you haven't legally obtained the rights to it, and you exploit it and commercialize it and make money, you're going to be responsible to somebody if it turns out to be someone else's property.
Cells taken from Lax have been responsible for breakthroughs, including the polio vaccine. Thermo Fisher Scientific has not responded to the lawsuit. You know, it's amazing how all these decades later, Henrietta Lax is still having such an impact, and not one that she consented to. It'll be interesting to see how that lawsuit shakes out. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since science and ethics, I'm Paris Alston. Be well. Hey, you're a podcast listener, obviously. Would you like this show along with all of WBUR's best news stories of the day about Boston and the region all in a podcast feed? Well, I suggest you search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe. You'll be able to find just the local segment of Consider This, plus our best coverage in business, tech, politics, education, and arts, all in one place. Search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe.